hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts Jacob Cazell, Jeff Chaney, and Todd Singer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 122 of the No Better Than Average podcast. I am Jeff Chaney, and along with me today, as always, are Jacob Cazell.
Hey, everybody.
And Todd Singer.
I just got off a United Airlines flight, and boy, are my arms tired.
Topical humor.
So we'll talk about that. At least a little bit. Just to throw it out there, if you want to call in and comment, the number to do so is 317-643-1212. Subscribe to our newsletter at nobettershow.com/join. So, hey, have I mentioned that I'm flying United pretty much every week?
I see that in your check-ins, yeah.
So, I'm kind of torn a little bit. I haven't exactly been happy with some of the service that I've received from United, and now with this, it's kind of like I kind of want to switch, but I've already got a lot of miles and a lot of segments, and I don't know. I was thinking about calling American and saying, hey, you know, I'm this status on United. Will you match it so that I can fly you guys? I don't know. I kind of want to not use them anymore after seeing this horrible, horrible thing.
I would think that this is a huge marketing opportunity for the other airlines. Like, they would be just shooting themselves in the foot. Because I imagine that you are not alone in your desire to maybe not patronize United.
Doesn't want to fly the friendly skies? Come on. That's our slogan.
When you absolutely positively have to get there.
So the one thing I will say, like, you know, I don't know how I would react in a situation where they were telling me I had to get off the plane. Probably not well either. But there does come a point where when you're dealing with airport security in general, you just have to suck it up and do what they tell you to. I mean, there does come that point. I'm not condoning what they did. I think it was ridiculous. But
so, you know, I saw the video, but I haven't really followed the story. Somebody was telling me, so I guess he was a doctor and was trying to get someplace for a procedure. And maybe that, you know, lent itself to the whole, I'm not coming off of this plane. Is that right?
And well, United had to get four crew members right on the flight that they'd already seated people on. So they had to get four people off.
I mean, yeah, they couldn't have found a Cessna to fly those guys to do the other flight that they had to do. I mean, they're an airline. You would think that they would figure that part out logistically.
So it does. So there's a couple things here. There's a systematic problem with how the airline industry has decided to operate in the United States and probably everywhere. But I know the United States, so I'm going to speak to that. And that is, they oversell every flight.
Right.
And they do that because inevitably, statistically, they have people that don't show up, and therefore they make more money.
Well, and when they do have to bump you, they're not out that much. You get, you know, a little bit of compensation. Everybody wins.
Now, but I'll tell you the biggest negative side of that, and something that no one ever talks about, is when you get into a situation like Delta faced last week, where you have one of your hubs get hit by a storm, and you cancel a day's worth of flights. And that is, once you've canceled a day's worth of flights, you're toast for weeks.
Right.
Because you have no space on any flights the next day to send any of the people that couldn't get out the first day. And so you bump a few people, and then that just keeps carrying over for, you know, like I said, at least a week.
You got to pay all that money to put them on other carriers' flights.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just, there's just not, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. It's kind of a mess. I don't really worry about it when I'm traveling for business, because if I really got bumped, then I get bumped, and there's nothing I can do about it. I won't be at the client, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean,
Yeah, but not everybody has a gig that's that flexible. I mean, some people have to be there.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, if he was a doctor and he was really had some procedure that he had to do, I mean, I understand where he's coming from. But again, I still hold out that there comes a point if, like I said, if security at airports are not a laughing matter anymore, and people have to understand that. And if they're there telling you, you have to get off this plane, then you get off the plane. Right. I mean, you just do. And, you know, I don't know. It still doesn't condone the behavior. I mean, the United, that was absolutely ludicrous. And there does come a point, like, I don't know. If someone's already on the flight, how do you...
they're probably counting on the fact that not everybody is a business traveler, and that there's some tourist who, hey, I'll get bumped, I'll take a two-hour delay, I'll get another ticket, and you know, maybe a hotel voucher or whatever it is. I think we were talking about this with some coworkers today, and we looked it up. So if you're delayed for 2 hours or less, they have to give you 200% of a one-way ticket. On top of getting you to your destination. So there is a financial incentive for them to not bump you unless they have to. And if you're delayed more than 4 hours, it's 400% on top of getting you to your destination of a one-way trip. So, I mean, there is a financial, you know, disincentive there, but it's not huge. You would think, though, that they would have found other accommodations for their crew. And not, I mean, because what has this cost them in PR? I mean, this is just really got to be killing them.
I, like you said, I'm probably not the only one that's considering changing. The questions I have is any other airline going to be any different?
Probably not. They just haven't had this level.
They are now.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Because, I don't know.
If I'm in charge of the other airlines, I was like, don't stop at 800. Go to 1,000. Go to 1,200. Whatever that is, that's got to be worth more than negative PR.
I mean, absolutely.
Although, to be fair, like, who would have thought that there was a way that someone would actually record the incident and put it on the internet these days?
I know.
Yeah, I mean, what are the odds?
you just have to assume that you're always being recorded and put on the internet. Really?
They're apparently. My current boss used to work for AirTran, one of the airlines here in Indianapolis, and she said the fine print of a ticket basically says that you can be bumped even at the last minute, you know, according to the airline's discretion. However, that doesn't mean that that's the right route to take. And the other thing to learn is once you involve the police, it ceases to be under your control.
Mm-hmm.
Then the police are going to take over. So be very careful about if you're going to involve them or not.
Right.
Yeah. That goes for anybody, not just the airlines.
No, that's a good point. It's seldom a good thing to involve the police unnecessarily in any aspect of your life. But yeah, I mean, even if they would have bumped them and walked them to another airline and bought a first class ticket, it would have been less than the fallout that they are experiencing from this. It's bad.
But again, like, at what point, like, if you have police there telling you have to get off the plane,
You get up and get off the plane,
don't you? Like, I don't would. You just get up and leave?
I can't speak for his particular situation. If he really thought that he needed to be there to do a procedure that could have changed somebody's life, maybe you don't. If you know that you're closing a multi-million-dollar business deal that you have to be there for, and you see that there's 150 other people on this plane, I'm not getting off. I don't know.
Until they come and point to you and say, you off, and then there's cops there, and then what do you do? He missed his appointment.
I don't know, but I can't completely fault the guy if that's the situation that he was in. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't know.
I'm not saying that I fault him. Like I said, I don't know what... Luckily, I'll never be in that situation where I feel like, you know, someone's life is in my hands because I just am not that important. And it's just, I mean, that's just the truth.
If I don't work on these spreadsheets, it doesn't really matter.
Bonuses may or may not get paid on time. Executives will get slightly less of their giant bonuses if I can't get the spreadsheet entered.
And you know, like, I'm never going to be closing multi-million dollar deals. That's just not my my world. So, you know, I don't think I'll ever be in that situation, but it just seems like to me, like if you're a doctor and you know, you're performing open heart surgery tomorrow, do you not just like calmly and rationally explain that to someone? Like, and do they not listen? I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe he did, and maybe they just didn't listen. That's
I think
possible.
I read that he actually got back on the flight. I don't know if you guys read that.
Yeah, I read that too. Yeah. But I mean, again, if you just calmly explain to the gate agent or whatever and say, look, you know, I'm a doctor. I'm performing open heart surgery tomorrow morning in, you know, this destination city, and they're counting on me being there. I mean, what? I don't know. I find it hard to believe that they wouldn't just say, okay, well, we'll find someone else.
Right.
But maybe not. I don't know. I mean, I wish I could know more about the situation.
It sure was a lame response from United, basically saying, just direct all of your questions to the authorities. Like, whoa, that is your crisis response? I mean, they've been teaching crisis response to corporations since I've been in college, which is a long time ago.
Sure.
And that's your PR response, is to contact the authorities? That's bad.
Well, I mean, was that just that particular gate and that agent and that set of staff, or is that United's official stance?
That was United's response, according to the internet video that I saw, which couldn't possibly be inaccurate.
Yeah.
It's on the internet. It's got to be true.
There might be some retraining coming down the pike. I'm just saying.
That I manual would like to might congratulate United Airlines for being prominent for 20 years in college textbooks about how not to handle a PR crisis. Way to go, United.
Okay, enough on that, I guess. We'll ding the bell and move on to our next topic.
Kai had written in with a couple of things, and I saw the Todd, you had some back and forth with him on Twitter today about Le Echo. So maybe you can fill us in on some of the happenings and the doings on Le Echo.
Yes, Kai wrote in an article, Le Echo is not Le Bain Visio after all. And I read like the first sentence of it, and it said, because of regulatory headwinds. And I guffawed to myself because, no, it's not regulatory headwinds. They have no cash. They were forced to delay March payroll for their U.S. employees, Le Echo.
That's good.
That just came by recently. So I'm not really surprised that they're not going to go through with the Visio buy. And as I note here, it's hard to believe. If listeners remember, I bought a Le Echo phone, but I didn't push the right button, so they didn't give me the flash sale price. So I called them back up and said, why don't you just give me a refund for the difference? And they said, well, no, you have to send the phone back, and then on the next flash sale, buy it and purchase, you know, press the right buttons, and then we'll ship you another of the exact same phone. Like, now, how is that company going to run into financial difficulties? That seems like a solid business model right there.
Yeah. And as we talked, I mean, that does seem to be a little bit of a different buying mentality that you see in the Asian and Eastern companies. But it's not even like they have a giant presence in the U.S. where they couldn't make payroll for like 100,000 people. It says in the article, at least 500 U.S. employees may have been affected by this payroll delay. I mean, that's a lot of people. Don't get me wrong. I personally don't want to be on the hook for, you know, paying 500 people. I've had 12 people on payroll, and, you know, it's nerve-wracking on Thursday when you know checks are going out. They got to cover. 500 is not a lot for a company as large as we have discussed. I mean, they're into all kinds of different things in the East, and it sounds like a large organization.
They had nine figures, like it was over what, 100? No, it was 300 million. It was almost the population of the United States, 300 million monthly users in China.
Yeah.
The Visio deal was like a $2 billion with a B acquisition. Yeah, and you're talking about 1 month of payroll for 500 employees. I think you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Cash flow, that's kind of important. Yeah, that's
how
not
do you,
so good.
You're a company that big. How do you not have loans to just cover that? I mean, it can't, how much could it possibly be?
I mean, a few million dollars? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
It could be seriously related to the capital controls in China. It's possible that they had something lined up with a bank in China, and with the government over there with their capital controls, that may have fallen through, and they're having to figure out an alternate way to route the money, perhaps.
Well, and that's fair. I mean, it's kind of hard to know when you start getting all the internet, especially with China controlling the economy as tightly as they still do. That's sure. a fair point. But yeah, a little worrisome if you can't get 500 people paid. Kai had also written in and shared an article showing that the fantastic new Galaxy S8's facial recognition features apparently can be bypassed using just a photo. I thought they had actually had that problem licked years and years ago, but apparently no. There was a demo, a YouTube video was posted at the S8 launch event where a user holds up a selfie on his own phone in front of one of these shiny new Galaxy S8s, and the phone goes, "Hey, it's you," and unlocks. It bypassed the lock screen. Apparently, there is also going to be, I think they said, some iris scanning support coming, but I guess that's not fully in place yet. Apparently, a statement that was given to Ars Technica, Samsung explained that facial recognition cannot be used to authenticate mobile payments or to access the device's secure folder, both of which require the use of the phone's other biometric features. And I'm thinking, that's kind of half-baked. Like, either you make it work or you take the feature out, but you can't put something in that is either fooled like that, or, you know, I can't do a mobile payment because my face doesn't work and I've got to use my fingerprint, and, oh, it's on a weird place on the back, and hang on a second, and, oh, here's just my credit card, let me just put it in the machine. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting that they would roll that that feature out.
Yeah, that's something that they were working on. I believe the Note 7 had this functionality as well. And I hadn't heard that they'd have the same types of problems, but I know one of the big issues they've got is the speed, that it's taking so long for the phones to actually scan the iris and say, yes, it's unlocked, that people are struggling with it. So I don't know that technology is ready for prime time yet.
Well, and how good does the camera have to be to get the uniqueness of your iris? I mean, the front-facing cameras on a cell phone aren't super high res like that, right? I mean, I would think that there's
some... It had a third camera. It has a third camera
Just for that.
Yeah.
Because it's a different kind of lens, too. Like, you're not trying to capture an image, you're trying to capture an iris scan. Sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
No, that's okay. So speaking of the S8, and, you know, listening to rumors and then being totally, you know, underwhelmed or disappointed. So there was a rumor flying about that the S8 was going to have a slow motion capability of 1,000 frames per second. Did you guys hear that?
I had not heard that.
I thought it was smaller than that, but yes, I had heard that was a really nice slow motion camera coming.
The rumor that was going around that I heard from several sources, and including, like, you know, Leo Laporte and the folks over at iMore and a couple other places, was that it was going to have a slow-mo camera 720p at 1,000 frames per second.
I mean, that's not nothing.
No, that's crazy. That would have been amazing. And as it turns out, wah, 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 rumor untrue. So it only does 240 frames per second. So,
well, that's the same as the iPhone,
which is what the iPhone already has. And not that it's not cool, it is, but 1,000 frames per second, four times more cool.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you're talking, I mean, that's almost a factor of four, a little over a factor of four. That would be a big deal at 720, because even some of the affordable high speed digital cameras out there, usually the resolution drops way down. Like, some of them go down into the 320 by like 160 range when they start pushing up into that 1,000+ frames per second.
Just a rumor, but man, one that I was like, oh my god, I may have to buy this phone because I want that. But yeah,
good news. You can get the Sony Premium. What is it here? Premium XZ. Sorry, Sony Xperia XZ Premium, which is supposed to be 720p at 960 FPS.
Wow, that would be awesome. Seriously,
it just doesn't have a fingerprint sensor.
Oh.
I suppose it depends what you need it for. I mean, how often do you shoot at 900 and whatever frames per second? But when you do need it.
I would shoot it all the time if I had it. Just everything's cooler in slow-mo.
Super slow-mo.
It is. Slow-mo is really, really a cool effect.
You know, you take your water bottle out and start pouring water out, and it's cool at 920 frames a second.
And then what do? Like, you just keep feeding memory cards to it, because I assume that takes up a lot of
720p
space.
At 1,000 frames per second.
Yeah, that's might a take lot a of data. Bit of,
might take up a little bit of data, yeah, but it'd still be really cool.
The fingerprint sensor thing's interesting, because apparently Sony signed a deal in the U.S. with a carrier. The speculation is it's Big Red. And it fell through, or they had some issues with it, and so now they cannot have a fingerprint sensor in the United States until that contract is over.
Oh, because of exclusivity?
It's on the phone. It's on the phone, so they ship it to the U.S., but they cannot activate it.
Which means that it can be activated, because there'll be a rooted ROM out there that you can...
But that a rooted ROM doesn't violate the contract that Sony is not shipping.
No, you're right. You're right. Absolutely.
So,
but that's just...
That is stupid. You got to love just... contracts for the sake of contracts. Speaking of Big Red, so lots of news the last 2 weeks as all of the possible consumer protections in the FCC have been rolled back. There was an EFF, an Electronic Freedom Frontier Foundation, Electronic Freedom Foundation post last week saying that within days of Congress repealing online privacy protection, Verizon has announced new plans to install software on customers' devices to track what apps consumers have downloaded. With this spyware, Verizon will be able to sell ads to you across the internet based on things like which bank you use and whether you've downloaded a fertility app. So apparently Verizon was going to be pushing out, the rumors were, qualify this as rumors, Verizon was going to be pushing out an Android app called AppFlash, which was an app launcher and web search utility. They were going to, according to rumors, push it out to Android devices on Verizon's network, quote, in the coming weeks. So that has been walked back a little bit. As I was putting the notes together, I found a couple of notes from the EFF who said that they had received additional information from Verizon, and based on that information, they are withdrawing their post while they further investigate. A statement from Kelly Crummy, the director of corporate communications for Verizon, said, quote, as we said earlier this week, we are testing AppFlash to make app discovery better for consumers. It's always about the consumer. The test is on a single phone, the LG K20V, and you have to opt in to use the app, or you can easily disable the app. Nobody's required to use it. Verizon is committed to your privacy. Visit verizon.com/about/privacy to view our privacy policy. And interestingly, and I've got some notes down here further that we can talk about, you know, with VPN and should you use a VPN, and you know, the House pushing in, voting to overturn the FCC privacy rules. So after all of that kerfuffle, it seems that some of the largest ISPs have quickly started to walk that back, as it has become resoundingly unpopular. And I saw that Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T have all pledged that they will not sell your browsing information to third parties. So hopefully that is something that they actually do instead of don't do. I said do. So I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I don't know what I think about that. It doesn't surprise me, and it probably should. What do you think, Todd?
First of all, I think that Verizon's statement was way better than United Airlines. And then just as far as the House and the FCC, it's hard for me to get too excited about this. You get a lot for that information. Targeted ads don't tend to bother me that much, because it usually is stuff that I'm either interested in or stuff that I laugh that they think I'm interested in. I don't know. It's really tough for me to... How different is this than what I'm giving Google and what Google is giving to the advertisers. I mean, if they're aggregating it up and saying, this is the percentage of our users that have installed this app, would you like to buy an ad that targets them?
But from what I'm read, it's not aggregate. I mean, they're building a profile on you, and when you search for diapers and other baby accoutrements, they're building a profile that Todd Singer is probably expecting with his wife or life partner. And I mean, that is not in the aggregate, which I don't have a problem with aggregate. I'm fine. I am a demographic. I get it. I'm a 41-year-old white dude with 41-year-old middle-class white dude hobbies. Like, I fit right into that demographic, and I'm fine with that. But I do bristle at the thought of, oh, well, he went to this bank, and then he went to Amazon, and then he went here and looked at that. I mean, I don't necessarily want that level of detail, and your ISP has that information by necessity of you routing all of your traffic through them.
And we know that Target was doing that 2 years ago, right?
Right. I think it was Target, or was it one of the big drug chains where they were sending out like the coupons for baby diaper, for diapers and formula and such to the girl, right?
Right. Ahead of, and the dad found it, and the dad called up and yelled at Target, and Target apologized, but found out that, oh yeah, she actually was pregnant. Their algorithm had worked.
Right. And I mean, the problem is that there is so much complete information about ourselves. I mean, we're not doing ourselves any favors by, you know, whether we're doing it intentionally or being victims. And I think the difference, Todd, for me is that I choose, there is perceived value for me from Google. So I am willingly giving them that information to build that profile, to be part of their demographic for the value that they give me. I'm freaking paying Comcast. They don't get a double dip, but that's what this would allow them to do. So the resolution is the CRA, the consumer, it's Senate Joint Resolution 34, called the CRA resolution. Obviously it was passed pretty much along party lines. Some of the things that it would allow your ISP to do, sell your browsing history to basically anybody that wants it, hijack your searches and share them with third party, monitor all the traffic, put undetectable, undeletable tracking cookies into all of your non-encrypted traffic, and then, you know, pre-install software on your phones to monitor traffic, even encrypted traffic, which somebody, and I don't remember who, I want to say Sony, but if I am wrong on that, maybe somebody can fact check me and let us know, had installed on their desktop some years ago, basically a tool that sat in between, and anytime you made a request to a secure website, HTTPS, it would intercept that, decrypt it, broker the connection, and send off to Sony where you were going and what your traffic was doing. So, I mean, you can, if you have, you know, privileged access to a device, you can do those man-in-the-middle attacks, and you can watch the supposedly secure encrypted traffic, and the user thinks everything's just fine. It looks like it's secure to them. So lots and lots of articles the last 2 weeks on why you need a VPN, where you should get a VPN, how to use your VPN. So I did what any good geek would do, and I went and decided to try it out and see how well it works, and I can report in that it is not ready for prime time. So I don't know if you guys have played with VPNs much, if at all, with this whole thing that has popped up. But I went out and I actually tried two of them. I'm not going to name names because I don't want to disparage them. Not that there's anything disparaging. I think that what they did was, what they do is fine. You have to understand the technical limitations. But they're two pretty well-known VPN providers, and I signed up for both of them to give them a whirl. And so just a couple of observations. One of the things that I had noticed is there is no easy way to run all of the connections in your house through a VPN. You can if you have certain routers that support the OpenVPN protocol, but from everything that I've been reading, it slows your connection down to a crawl, because that means your router has to do a bunch of heavy lifting. Sure. To do it. And I've read people getting like on 100 megabit connections, they're lucky to get 15 or 20 megabit if they're pushing everything through a VPN. So that's the first gotcha. So you have to install something on your computer, an OpenVPN client or the client directly from the VPN provider. I did that. It works fine. It works on Macs. It works on Windows. It works on iPhones. They've got Android clients. It does slow your connection down a little bit. Like I was doing some speed tests on my wired connection, and off of the VPN, I could get, you know, like 120 megabit pretty reliably. On the VPN, 80 to 90. So not bad, but it does take, knocks a little bit off the top there. On a wireless device, I'm getting like 30 or 40 off the VPN, 20 on the VPN. So there's a haircut there. It breaks a lot of websites. Netflix just flat out does not work with either of the VPNs or either of the locations that I tried. A big selling point that they tout is all these different ways that you can bypass geo proxies, and they just seem to have all been caught. And one of the providers has something like 3,500 servers across, I don't know how many countries, but they have them all over the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Sweden, all over Europe. I couldn't get to Netflix on any of them. Like, it would get you there, and you'd start to play something, and it would come up and go, you're behind a VPN, and we're not going to show you any content. And that was true for both of the providers that I tried, despite reading that people had said, oh, well, this provider works, that provider doesn't. Well, that provider works, this none of them worked for me. I had some random problems with other websites, completely flipped out. Surprisingly, LastPass, I went to log into LastPass, and it said, I don't know who you are. This is coming from an IP address I've never seen. You've got to go through all of these secondary security procedures to make sure you're really who you say you are. And when I got the email to say I really was who I said I was, it's like, we've noticed you've never logged in from California before, and now you're trying to log in from California. So that raised all kinds of fraud alerts and whatnot. And so I was locked out of LastPass momentarily. It breaks on my phone all of my connections to work. It it causes my Exchange accounts to lock my account, and then I have to log into password self-service and un-disable myself. And I get, they probably have all of their security filters turned up to 11, so that may not be the case. Your mileage may vary with your corporation, but with mine, as soon as I turn on the VPN, within 2 hours, I'm locked out of my work accounts, and I have to go reset my accounts, and it's a huge pain in the keister. So, yeah, it's definitely not ready for prime time. Like, I consider myself reasonably technically knowledgeable, and I want to throw devices through the wall. I'm not that paranoid. So I don't know that it's a good answer to just tell people, oh, just put a VPN on and you'll be fine. Not ready yet. Some of the things you can do, there's a great plugin. It's available for Chrome and for Firefox. It's called HTTPS Everywhere. It's a web browser plugin written by the EFF, and it automatically attempts to switch the website from HTTP to HTTPS to help protect you so that all that traffic is encrypted. It's easy to install, real low overhead. I would highly recommend doing that. And if you do want kind of on-the-fly VPN protection, the Opera web browser has a built-in VPN option that's completely free to use. They got bought, and I know we talked about it on this podcast maybe a year ago, but they got bought by a big VPN company, and they kind of bundled it in. And if you use Opera, you can actually do VPN on a browsing tab level, so you can turn it on for a tab even. So maybe look at those, but I've got a whole bunch of links that I'll put in the show notes that just talk about VPNs in general. You can go read them if it's something that you're interested in, tinker with it. You know, maybe if one of our listeners has played with VPNs and has some recommendations or some thoughts, things that I did not try or I might be overlooking, I would love to hear more about ways that you guys have overcome this, because you know, it is something to, even before all this, probably, you know, take privacy a little bit more seriously. And I don't know that we do, but I'm here to tell you, after dinking with it for 2 weeks, I'm just ready to throw it all in the trash. It doesn't work as seamlessly and as magically as all of these articles make it sound like, when they just say, oh, the FCC is going to let your ISP sell your information. Well, just get a VPN and everything will be all right. It is not that easy. So that's what I got to say about that. I don't know. Like I said, if anybody out there has got anything they want to share, would love to hear it. So, yeah.
And this was already happening, right? Like, the rule that
up to about 9 months ago.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, up to about 9 months ago, this was happening. And then towards the end of Obama's run, he put a rule in place that they couldn't do it. And right. now that rule has just been overturned. So this is not anything new. It unfortunately, some protections that were put in place by the last administration have been stripped away. But
gotcha.
This isn't anything new.
No, and it's one of those that, you know, people hear about this and they all of a sudden go nuts, and you couldn't get on the internet on a tech site in the last 2 weeks without reading article after article of, you know, why this is bad and how the government is screwing you over, not that they don't already every day in every way.
In fairness, it is bad, but it comes down to a convenience thing, and it's like you said, it's not convenient to circumvent the situation, so right. just learn to live with it. I don't know. I mean, they want to know that I'm watching the Iron Fist. They can know that.
I tried putting, I think, Signal. I think I still have it installed, or whatever the program was before it turned into Signal, on my phone, and so I would send encrypted texts out.
Right.
But it adds, this is completely first world problems, but it added like a minute or two to the delivery time. And that doesn't sound like a lot until you're texting back and forth to your wife in the store saying, hey, where are you? And then I tell my wife, oh, I didn't get that for 2 minutes because I was using a private encrypted text messaging app. And she doesn't care about that. So yeah. I abandoned it pretty quickly.
I feel like exposing state secrets, but an extra minute's not going to kill you. Yes. Asking which aisle you're in because you can't find your wife in the megastore, probably don't need, First Nation in grade encryption for that.
If you're an investigative journalist, you'll want to care about this. But
most people, this is just not important.
Right.
There was a browser that they had on iOS at one point that had a built-in VPN in it.
And Opera.
Opera, that's right. It was Opera. And I tried using that when it first came out, and oh my God, it was horrible.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, I don't browse for anything that I care enough to go through the inconvenience of needing that kind of protection. So.
Well, and you're not really, I feel like this is one of those, I'm not necessarily trying to stop the government from knowing what I'm doing. They have smart people and unlimited budgets. They can know what I'm knowing. I'm just trying to minimize my demographic footprint that identifies to me personally that my ISP can use to exploit, because it's not enough that Comcast is already getting $220 a month out of me. They've got to turn around and sell that for, I think I read.
But look at it this way. If they weren't turning around and selling that, they'd be billing you $330 a month.
I suppose. I think I'd read in one of the articles they were estimating it to be worth close to $2.5 billion just to the market in general. It's a lot of money. So
hey, I saw what I thought was an interesting article. This is just going to be a quick hit, not a lot of details other than, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory once I say it, but McDonald's of Australia is now accepting job applicants via Snapchat.
Really?
Yeah, they want potential candidates to send the company a 10-second video using a filter that shows them wearing a McDonald's uniform. And they're calling it Snaplications.
I mean, do you submit any information, or is it just I'm filtering myself into a fry cook uniform?
You're filtering yourself into a McDonald's uniform, and you're sending them the thing, and they're considering that an application for employment, and they're going to review, and they're going to pick people that they think did, you know, exemplify the McAttitude that they're looking for.
So it's a gimmick.
Yeah, but I just thought it was hilarious.
That is,
I
was like, funny.
Like I said, not that there's a bunch to this. I just thought it was interesting and funny. I mean, quite honestly, you know, their target demographic of employees accepting applications via Snapchat's probably going to be helpful for them.
Yeah, because it's not millennials right. for them. Right now, it's whatever the generation is after millennials, which I can't remember.
You know, I was just talking with my wife about this. What are they called? They're called...
They're called Get Off My Lawn!
It's like from 1996 onward, and they're... I'm not going to remember it. But, you know, I mean, I suppose, like, if you're talking about hiring for a lot of those kind of jobs, short of, you know, can you pass a background check, you probably get just as good a luck throwing a dart at a dartboard as opposed... I mean, you're not necessarily looking for super reliable. You just want someone who's going to show up and, you know, not cough into the fry basket, right?
This says Generation Z.
Yeah, Generation Z. They're the Centennials. That's what they're calling them.
Oh, Centennials. I hadn't heard that one yet.
Yeah,
that
makes sense. Generation Z or Centennials. That's interesting. I don't Snapchat, but the teenagers I know, man, they can't get enough of that Snapchat. They are over it.
My daughter and my son use for communication, yeah. Basically.
Oh, absolutely. They're not on the Facebook or the Twitter or the Instagram even. They're all on the Snapchat. Well, you know, I saw this. I meant to talk to you about this a few weeks ago. I didn't know if you'd seen this, Jeff, but it's. I put it in the notes because guaranteed to piss Jeff off. Have you seen, talking about convenience ruining us all, have you seen the Stouffer's seasoning wraps commercial? So there is a commercial. Stouffer's has a new product. It's basically a sheet of parchment paper that apparently has seasonings on it. You wrap it around a chicken breast and you cook it in a pan. It's for the person who can't be bothered to actually, you know, season their piece of chicken. Now, I've looked. You get four seasoning wraps. Four. For $2. In a box.
$2?
$2.
Did you say $2?
They're 50 cents a pop for a piece of, a bit of parchment with, it's like impregnated with some sort of an oil that is tacky at room temperature, and it holds the seasoning onto it, and then you wrap your chicken breast around it, and as it cooks, the oil heats up and transfers to the chicken, so you cook it on like 6 minutes on one side, flip it, cook it over 6 minutes on the other side, throw the parchment away, presto, chain zero, you've got a perfectly, deliciously seasoned, nutritious chicken breast, all from Stouffer's.
See, you think this would piss me off? I think this is genius. I'm kicking my ass for not thinking about myself. This is genius, man.
I cannot believe this.
You know, so it's got to cost them next to nothing to do this, and you can't reuse it. Oh, that's genius.
No, it
just
is
genius.
The ultimate in can't cook, like monotasking ludicrousness. Oh, it makes me so like, mad that such a product exists.
A thing of spice is like a dollar, right? Yeah. Just like a little.
I mean, wow. You know, like we splurge and we buy the Weber brand because we like that. But, you know, a decent sized can of the Weber brand is, you know, it's less than $5. And we can season packages and packages of chicken.
Get like a thing this big for 10 bucks.
Yeah.
It lasts for a year easy.
Yeah.
It's just, and look.
Jeff is making the shaking out motion.
Visual. Look, all you got to do.
Nope, that apparently
in
is.
In your other hand, you have to pour the oil on.
I would like to point out that we are a nation where people subscribe to unassembled dinners in a box to your door. Yeah. And those companies are doing gangbusters. There's like five different Fresh Time, Blue Aprons, whatever.
I will say about those is at least they are teaching you a skill because they're giving you a recipe, oftentimes links to videos on how to cut the vegetables correctly, how to cut the chicken or, you know, whatever. So they're teaching you a skill. At least there's something there besides a piece of parchment paper with greasy spice.
Yep, pretty much. That's all it is. Parchment paper.
Spice.
Greasy
that was one of the Spice
paper.
Girls, all right?
Greasy spice.
So. Where's the end there?
I thought that you would appreciate this.
That's awesome. Love it.
Yeah. That's been I've been wanting to talk to you about that for weeks now and had to get you back on the show to mention it. I think you're a big voodoo user, aren't you, Jeff?
Not No, I think that's Todd.
Oh, Todd's the Vudu user? I knew one of you was.
Yeah, I definitely use it. I've bought some movies from Vudu, and also I've done some rentals from them as well.
So have you seen this thing that Vudu is going to be doing? So I think this was actually sent in by a listener. I can't remember if I put this on there on my own or if somebody had sent it in. It may have been one of those where both happen. But Vudu is doing this, they're calling it their first mobile offering. They're offering up nearly 8,000 DVD and Blu-ray digital files. So if you own a disc, you use their mobile app, you take a picture of your disc to authenticate that, yes, you own it, and then you can download the digital file to your television, console, set-top box, tablet, or Blu-ray player, ironically, and then you have a digital HD copy, I suppose. It's $2 for a Blu-ray disc or a DVD to SD resolution. And apparently, if you download the app for iOS or Android, you get one complimentary conversion. So at the very least, it's worth downloading the app and take your favorite movie, and you get it for free as long as it's in their catalog. It says they've partnered with most of the major studios: Sony, Paramount, Fox, and Universal. The notable exception is Disney. They do not partner with Disney, so no Marvel, no Star Wars, no Pixar movies in there.
So Disney has their own service for digital Blu-ray, and you basically get a digital Blu-ray copy with every purchase. Mm-hmm. There's a little slip of paper in every Disney thing that says, go put this code in, and then you get it. So,
is that the ultraviolet system?
Yeah, the ultraviolet system.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Disney movies anywhere, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where the breakdown was, but I thought that was an interesting one. And I knew one of you was a big Vudu user.
Sure.
And you said
that's something I'm definitely interested in, because I've got a few movies, lying around that for $2 would definitely be worth getting digital.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty low barrier to entry. So, $2,
yeah, absolutely.
Who cares? That's, you can't even buy a cup of coffee now.
$2. You can't. Yeah, that's true. So to roll in two of my least favorite things in the entire universe together, the Tesla market value.
Yes.
Surpassed GM and Ford now.
Yeah, Ford last the most week.
Valuable American car company according to stock market cap. And I just want to point out, this is two of my big pet peeves. One is Tesla in general, because I don't think that they're very well proven. And two is the stock market, because my God, what? Seriously? Like, in what universe is there any reasonable person that would say Tesla is more valuable than Ford or General Motors?
It's so, what you said a few weeks ago, Jeff. It's not where you've been in the stock market.
It's where you're going. They're pricing in excitement about the potential in the future.
But that is just, that's why the stock market ends up screwing people so hard, because there is no way. I mean, seriously, think about it. Ford has, they sell what, 6 to 7 million vehicles a year?
Yeah, so I saw the update today. We're recording this on the 10th, and it just broke today that they overtook GM. And I had read in the article that in the first quarter, Tesla had shipped 25,000 vehicles, and in the same time, GM had shipped 690,000 vehicles.
I mean, think about this. Like, if you just took GM and said, okay, we're not making another car, and we're just going to sell assets.
Oh yeah. I mean, GM has assets for their assets. I mean, there is no...
I hate the stock market so bad for that reason, because I understand that you do have to build in... It's future performance that you're betting on, and I understand that. And I understand that Tesla's future looks bright, kind of, maybe. I still question that, and everyone knows my opinions on that. But to even think that you would want to value them above Ford or GM is just, gosh, it's just so stupid. It's just dumb.
Again, I mean, that people believe that there is a reason to pay that premium, that at some point in the future, it's going to be a reward on their... And what, Tesla's trading at what, $313 almost? I mean, That's a lot.
Because I own any of their stock. That is for sure.
Well, and I don't really know how this works. I was talking with some people about this today, in fact, and somebody asked what their PE ratio was, and I looked it up. And so for negative last something? Year, it's negative. For this year, it's negative. Okay, so here's the chart I found. So for 2017, for the PE ratio. So for 2017, it's negative 111. The forecast for 2018, positive 452. So that's a 563-point swing in 1 year. So there is a lot of optimism built into that price. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but I read an article recently, because you know how I love my personal financial investment letters, and it talked about how the suppression of the rates by the central bank in the U.S. allows stock prices to go higher, especially for companies that don't make a lot of money but are quote-unquote positioned. Because Amazon falls into this category too, right? They don't make a lot of profit. They have a lot of sales.
Right.
But their profit is only so-so, and the fact that they can basically raise capital for almost nothing helps boost their stock price.
Well, but I will say this about Amazon is, yes, they don't make a huge profit, but I think a lot of that is because they're reinvesting profits into, you know, future things. I'm not sure that's true with Tesla. I think Tesla is a lot of vapor. But
I don't know. I mean, Elon is one of those kooky geniuses where maybe he really does have something cooking under there, and it's hard to know because his endeavors are so pie in the sky. I mean, you know, look at the things he's betting on, and it's just, I mean, some of it is absurd, like Hyperloop and, you know, Solar City.
The
tunnel thing and SpaceX. I mean, they're big, big gambles and they're ballsy. And if they miss, everybody's going to be like, well, yeah, I could have seen that was going to miss. But if they hit, they're going to be rewarded just in astronomical amounts.
They just had a breakthrough in their space program, right, where they were able to reuse a booster, a booster rocket,
and they've already shown that they can land on a barge. They did that or late last year, I think. I don't know, fall or winter. I mean, yeah, they definitely are making some breakthroughs. But
it's not the automotive, Jeff. It's the rockets. That's what people are buying in the stock market.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean,
the tourist trips to Mars.
Yeah.
Okay.
People will pay big money to go in outer space. I mean, as evidenced by Virgin Galactic and how many tens of thousands of people have already signed up for a $250,000, you know, barely just above orbital flight to say that they can do it. I mean, there's a lot of people with a lot of money. I don't know any of them, and I'm not one of them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so, speaking of Amazon, you mentioned, did you see the new Amazon Cash that they rolled out? Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a really neat thing. They are basically trying to court the bankless, and they have partnered up with a handful of brick-and-mortar retailers that includes currently CVS Pharmacy, Speedway gas stations, Sheetz. It's not one that I had heard of, but it looks like a convenience store. Yes. Come and Go, D&W Fresh Market, Family Fair Supermarkets, VG's Grocery. I guess they're going to be adding other stores later this year. U.S. only right now, but basically you can take your smartphone into one of those locations. You can pull up an Amazon Cash barcode on your phone and tell the nice cashier you would like to load any amount between $15 and $500 in a single transaction, and that money is instantly available on your Amazon account to spend. The thing that really surprised me is it said that they are trying to target people who don't shop online yet, people who get paid in cash, or who don't have a bank account or debit card and don't use credit cards. Cash customers, they're estimating account for around 27% of all consumers in the United States. That is a huge amount.
Drug dealers, man, they only deal in the cash.
Okay, so sure. I mean, you're glib, but that's some of it. But when you think almost 30% of people are unbanked and underbanked, that's kind of hard to get your head around these days.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's one of the reasons Walmart has their own bank, right?
Oh, who does Walmart own? I didn't realize they had their own bank.
Oh, which one is it? They have their own bank. I don't remember the name of it.
I mean,
I know they own their own bank.
Kind of like when GM owned GMAC Financing. Same idea.
Right.
Yes.
And Walmart has a real estate company as well. Same type of thing.
And yeah, that makes sense because Walmart is investing in real estate. I mean, and all the improvements that go along with it. But yeah, that just surprised me. I mean, it's a good idea. I can't think it's something that I'm going to use, but... 27%, almost 30% of people. If they can capture that, that's a lot of additional revenue flowing in.
Go Bank is the name of the Walmart bank.
I don't know that I've heard of that one.
Low cost checking account costs $2.95 and you have to have $20 balance.
Okay. I don't know that I pay anything.
Isn't that revolutionary? When I was in high school, I would take my paycheck from Service Merchandise across the way to the Payless Superstore
and cash
grocery store that was next door and cash my paycheck. I mean, the grocery store cash your paycheck.
Sure.
I'm not even sure if they charge anything if you had like a, you know, their card or whatever, but it wasn't very much. Then you had your cash.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and you know, you say that, and one of my first jobs where it was not like working for a relative, I worked at a drugstore, the now defunct Osco. I don't think Osco Drugs is around anymore. And they were right next door to a Marsh supermarkets, and
you had to
have a Marsh card, and you had to pay a one-time like $5 enrollment. And I think you got that money back if you traded in your check cashing card, and if as long as it was a payroll check drawn on like a company, they would cash it up to whatever the amount was. And I want to say that if you got it as a Marsh card, you got like a little bit of a kick on it, but otherwise it was free. And yeah, I mean, I was in high school, so I didn't care about saving money or paying bills or any of that stuff. But I mean,
most places don't even cut checks anymore. Like I know McDonald's, you know,
they do a debit card if you don't have a bank account.
If you don't have a bank account, they give you a debit card, and that's it. And you either use the debit card as you go, or you can use the debit card once and get cash out up to the amount, you know, that you have on the card.
Yep.
But they don't cut checks.
State unemployment is that way now. If you don't have or you get it on a prepaid Visa MasterCard deal.
That is correct. I can attest to that 100%.
Yeah, and I think I remember reading, I don't remember the numbers, but it saved the state just a bucket of money for not having to process and print actual paper checks and send them out, and I mean, all the things that go along with it. But yeah, and like I said, when I was in high school working with adults, I bet 80% of the people that worked at that Osco Drug took their check next door to the Marsh and cashed it. Sure. And yeah, that's just kind of what you did.
India just put in a huge cashless payment infrastructure, probably the most sophisticated in the world, and they're basically having people use and it'd be so similar to a social security number, but that's a bigger deal there because a lot of people in India, they may have a mobile phone but not an actual physical address, and so it's hard for them to get into a traditional banking system. So the government there has put in this huge infrastructure for cashless payments, transactions, etc. It's really interesting. I think it makes India more investable, but I'm not sure if the Western world would convert to that or not, just because we have such a long tradition of being able to transact in cash or not.
Well, and I think you can be a lot more cavalier when you have such a huge percentage of the population that is, by Western standards, much more transient and, you know, no permanent address, but they have the cell phone. And I think that there's a lot less of that in a, you know, a more developed country. And I'm sure inside the big cities probably doesn't play well, but outside of the big cities, I've heard some of the cashless ideas that they're doing in India are really big deals. somebody put this in the notes, and I'm curious who, because I actually have something that touches on this, but AT&T buys Straight Path to boost 5G spectrum. Who is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was me.
Tell me about that.
They are, it's to expand their network. Straight Path is, it was one of those companies that was just set up to bid on the 5G spectrum, but they have, it's AT&T is going to use it for their implementation of millimeter wave tech, MM wave tech. And it's basically a way for them to put like repeaters on the power grid. And so while they, you know, this may not be a consumer facing one is what they're saying here on, I just found this article on androidpolice.com. But it's a way for them to expand the network and allow for tens of gigabits up and down based on just putting repeaters on, you know, an almost ubiquitous infrastructure that's already there.
Hmm.
And it reminded me of, I remember reading years ago about BPL, broadband power line, and I remember Cincinnati was one of the cities they were doing that, and it turns out they just shut that down in 2014. So they actually did implement BPL technology, but it didn't work very well. So they just shut it down in 2014.
And that's interesting. I didn't know they had gotten it rolled out anywhere, because what's funny is I was just within the last 8 days, I was listening to old Art Bell radio shows on the streaming radio, and he was on talking about BPL, and there was a huge backlash from the ARRL community that BPL was going to absolutely kill shortwave and ham radio bands, because it would leak off of the power lines, and it was leaking in those frequency ranges that it was the low band VHF, so it was going to screw up those low channels, like 6 and 8 on the 4, 6 and 8 on the channel dial, and it was also going to cause problem with ham bands. And this was a show that from like 1999 or something like that, maybe 2000, and they were railing against it, and I thought we had done a good job of getting it shut down, and I went to this article that you linked to about Cincinnati's BPL initiative, and it talks about the fact that they had to put in notches to block out the ham bands, because it would just completely scramble ham communication. And I'm curious if in 2017 that's even really a huge deal. Like, I can't think that there's nearly as many hams as there were 17, 18 years ago, even. I thought that was interesting.
I don't know if that is still an issue or not, but I don't really have much familiarity with the ham radio. Anyway, it's obviously possible that there's still an enthusiast community that's concerned.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never gotten into that world as deeply as I'd like to. But I saw that BPL, and it tickled my spidey senses that I just heard somebody talking about that. And I had no idea they'd rolled it out anywhere. That's interesting. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I think we're over an hour, and we've given the fans what they want, which is just nonsense, an hour of nonsense. So, I think it's maybe time to wrap it up. Jeff, what is it that you are in love with this week?
So, I'm going to throw out there, I think we kind of spoiled this before, but
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I have a watch band that I'm going to recommend. I got a Clockwork Synergy blue vintage leather band. And I know you've said you're not a huge leather band fan. That's hard to say quickly.
A little bit.
Yeah. But I am. I like leather bands. I picked this one up, Clockwork Synergy. They make some NATO straps. I also have one of their NATO straps, so I can give a high recommendation to either one. I do like the leather one a whole bunch. It's chunky. It's what I would consider a chunky leather band. But really high quality leather, and it was like $30. It was like next to nothing. And really impressive looking, got a lot of compliments on it. I'm wearing one of their orange leather bands this week.
Ooh, it's very orangey.
I like orange. I'm not gonna, and I got my orange face to go with it. Oh wait.
Yeah, it's look at that. It's all matchy-matchy.
Matchy-matchy. But anyway, they make a good band, and they have several different styles. So give them a look, clockworksynergy.com, and they have quite a few leather bands. They have quite a few NATO-type bands. They have some rubber, you know,
like the dive strap style.
Yeah, like the dive strap style. But one of the interesting things is the little pin leather quick release pins. If you look at what they have, you could put any leather strap in with the little you know, buckle thing that, or blank thing that fits on the end rather easily. So if you have a favorite leather band at home that you've been wanting to put on your Apple Watch, it'll work really easily and well.
Oh, cool.
With that little breakaway thing, it's right on their front page. But yeah, I really, really enjoy it. I have not bought any of the plastic or silicone bands at this point, but I can tell you that the other ones that I have bought have been top quality, and I like them a lot.
Yeah, they're very nice. I've got one of their two-piece NATOs for my Apple Watch, and I really like it. It's really nice. Yeah.
They even have, like, if you go to their sale page, they have a nylon NATO set of seven bands for $42. Like, they have some interesting things where, like, you can buy sets of bands for like next to nothing. So yeah, just kind of interesting. Check them out. I think that they make some pretty neat stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Todd, how about you? What is it that you love?
So what I love this week is the Velour Icon Pack for Android. And I know this is a bit silly, but I just derive so much pleasure from an attractive icon pack and making my desktop look all different. And I had been using the Moonshine Icon Pack for a while and just decided it was time for a change. I had put this one on my wish list. I don't even know how many months ago that somebody recommended it. I just love it. It's the traditional circle icon, so not the new fancy squircles that are in like the Google Pixel or whatever, but lots of color, lots of texture, shadows, and just a really attractive look for your icons on your desktop of your Android phone. It will cost you a buck, but I think it's well worth it.
Oh, look, and you know what? Your review even shows up at the top of the Google Play Store. Icons look great. Wonderful textures, says Todd Singer. 5 stars.
You got it.
Yeah, those are good-looking icons.
Spend a buck and make your phone a little bit more attractive.
That's something
I've been using the Pixel IP icon pack.
That one's well-rated as well. Does it have squircles?
No, they're round. But I like them. I think they're kind of nice.
I definitely wish that you could at least theme icons in iOS. That drives me a little nuts. Although I did see that, I don't know if it's in 10.3 currently or if it's coming out in 10.3.2. The developer will allow you to change the icon, inside the app if they support it. They can embed multiple icons and you can pick from which icon you want. So that's kind of cool.
It's good. It's just so much fun.
All we can get.
They should put it in. It's I don't know. It's just something to change up the look. It's like you get something a little bit different when you want to.
Yeah, I played with quite a few icon packs back in my Android dalliances.
There you go.
Oh yeah, the Pixel icon pack. Very
cool. Chow Studio. I like it. Awesome. A bonus what you love, but this Velour is looking pretty cool. I may have to, I may have to buy that.
Yeah, I like that style. That's very cool.
So what do you love, Jacob?
So I love this book. I've known about it for a while now, and I just finally picked it up and started reading it and have had a hard time putting it down. It's called Flash Boys. It's by Michael Lewis, author of The Big Short, Moneyball, and others. Basically, it's a look at high-frequency trading in the stock market and basically how the markets are rigged against pretty much everyone. And the story starts off with shady people that no one knows anything about, who create the straightest fiber optic line that you can get from between New Jersey and Chicago. And they were super cagey. They set up like dozens upon dozens of shell companies to acquire right-of-ways and access, and including tunneling through a mountain that everybody said was impossible to tunnel through to make the straightest possible fiber link to shave microseconds of latency off, and basically using it to sell access to these high-frequency traders that was allowing them to front-run stock trades and game the system. They would basically see the orders appear from Chicago before the rest of the stock market saw the orders, and then they could go and buy the stock at the lower price that the market hadn't seen move yet, and then sell it to these orders coming in, and they were basically beating everybody. It's a fantastic book. I really like the movie The Big Short. I've not read any of Michael Lewis's other books, but now I'm kind of itching to go back and pick up and read the books, because I've heard Moneyball is great. I've heard The Big Short as a book is great. And, you know, it's one of those that it really, if you're not angry at the big banks and Wall Street, you should be.
But this isn't them, right?
They're complicit. So, you know,
That's fair.
One of the things I did not know before reading this book. You probably know. I mean, this is a little unfair because you are the personal finance guy, but do you know what a dark pool is?
Actually, I don't know that term.
Okay, so I stumped the finance guy. I didn't know what that term was either until this book. So basically, a dark pool is I'm Goldman Sachs, and I want to try and match up buyers and sellers of stock without exposing them to the exchanges where I'm not going to get as big of a cut of that transaction. So if I can fulfill the order, if I can act as the broker of both sides of that sale, I get the commission on both sides of that sale. So it's in my interest to own that exchange. So there was regulation changes that allowed the banks to create these dark pools with almost no reporting requirements back to the SEC or the market. So there were all sorts of – basically everything goes back to finding ways to exploit loopholes in law. And there was a law passed that required customers buying stock to buy it at the fair market price. And yada, yada, yada. And so these dark pools claim that they're selling stock at the fair market price, but it's completely opaque to what's going on in the outside. And then it turned out that these banks were selling access to their dark pools by these high frequency traders.
Ooh, they were able.
So basically, I come in, I want to buy 100,000 shares of Apple. I'm a big institutional buyer. I go to Goldman. Goldman puts it into their dark pool. Nanoseconds after I put this order in, the high-frequency traders go to work. They go out and buy all of the stock off the market and pull it into the dark pool and sell it to me. I don't even know that the stock price has changed. I'm paying the higher price. They've made a few cents. At the end of the day, they're going home with no position in the market, and they're making billions upon billions of dollars, and nobody's any the wiser. Anyway, I can't do it justice. It's a fascinating book, Flash Boys. I can highly, highly recommend it. It is just an amazing book. And like I said, if you're not already mad at how the Wall Street and the stock markets work and basically screw you, there is no hope for the average home gamer unless you follow Buffett's strategy, basically, of buy it and never sell it and just buy it and dollar cost average. I mean, it's pretty much proof that you can't make money as a day trader because you can't beat, you know, algorithms that can think in microseconds. I mean, literally microseconds. Anyway, great book. It is what I love. Flash Boys by Michael Lewis. Cannot recommend it enough. Okay, well, I think we have reached the end of yet another episode. Hopefully you guys found it informative and enjoyed it and stuck through to the very end. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, you want to talk about your experiences with VPN, anything that we've talked about in the show, we would love to hear from you. And you can do that, as always, on our call-in comment line. That number is 317-643-1212. You can follow us on Twitter at NoBetterShow. You can visit our blog at www.NoBetterShow.com. Send us email. If you don't want to do the call-in thing, that is fine too. And that email address is feedback@NoBetterShow.com. We read them all, and we will read it on the air and make you internet famous, unless you don't want us to, and then we will not. We will respect your wishes. Go do the iTunes things. Give us a review. Tell people about us. Give us a couple of stars. That helps us in ways that you cannot imagine. And if you want to do the Patreon thing, we always support and appreciate our patrons. So thank you so much, Dennis, Jamie, Jeffrey, Jimmy, John, and Kai. We appreciate it. And you can do that Patreon thing yourself at patreon.com/NoBetterShow. You have just listened to the No Better Than Average podcast, so now hopefully you know better than average too. Have a great week, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Talk at you later, everyone.